Lupa Mayakiso, down in Cape Town. How are you? A very, very, is it concerning? You know, I don't, I'm watching the numbers increase in Cape Town. I'm seeing interviews with people at Groote Hospital and I'm worried. But Cape Townians don't seem to be.
I think privately there is concern, Howard. I mean, the schools, some of the schools have opened. Mm-hmm. I have, a niece who is doing her internship. And she's now been posted in one of the township areas, and I spoke with the husband. He was very concerned. But you know what? What I found sad was that she said they have noticed that since Monday, whilst they were dealing with a lot of cases, people coming in, you know, apparently with COVID, the number of people coming stabs, you know, and all the usual stuff has come back in a big way, and. We may laugh at government about the alcohol issue, but certainly you speak to people in the front line, they're saying, you know, the tide is swinging back to casualty being just busy.
In fact, Luba, I read a message from one of our listeners, Barry, who works at one of the major hospitals, and he said the trauma unit yesterday was probably as busy as New Year's Day. It was mostly assault and penetrating trauma. It was insane. So, yeah, very concerning indeed.
Remember, it's always been a Friday night and a Saturday night issue. So trauma would be jam-packed over the weekend, and then during the week, things would ease down. And so for them to be picking this up during the week is alarming. So it's no longer, you know, a weekend incident when people were getting drunk on a Friday or a Saturday. You know, to have that happen on Monday and the Tuesday, that's bad.
Yeah. In fact, my daughter a couple of years ago needed treatment at the Red Cross in Cape Town. They were the only ones that were dealing with what she was suffering with, which is, which she had CRIPS, complex regional pain syndrome. And, she couldn't walk. She was in excruciating pain. She was in a wheelchair and, she urgently needed to be admitted. It was around about the end of December. And they said to us, it'll do more damage to her psychologically to admit her to the children's hospital. That time of year, we had to wait until January where it would be less traumatic. And a lot of this, unfortunately, was around abuse. It was around terrible things because of alcohol that time of year. So it is certainly a major, major concern in South Africa.
Also, if you look at the figures just on COVID in the Western Cape, just not to lose sight of it, in Gauteng, 33 people have died from COVID. In the Western Cape, 568. The COVID infection deaths are almost 20 times in the Western Cape of what they are in Gauteng.
Yeah.
It's a proper problem.
It's a huge problem. Gimple says, how can Luba have a niece that's married? He sounds younger than you, Howie, and the other Howie.
Well, I'm getting flattered, so I'll take that.
You take it. Own it. All right, please can we talk... Please can we talk about... Luba, you're saying?
Which one do you want to go to? You want to go to the U.S. or do you want to come to Pretoria, the High Court?
Well, let's just quickly start off in the U.S. We've been talking quite a lot about it. I read out a piece that I have written for the Jewish Report. It'll be in the paper tomorrow, but I felt it was important to read. And my concern around this is that Sanatya and I were talking yesterday, and I found that we were getting ourselves embroiled in all sorts of things. And when I came home yesterday, during the day, my wife said to me, why haven't I seen anything, you write anything on the situation? And I said, because it's so complex. And she said, why? What's so complex about it? And then I thought to myself, she's absolutely right. Because when we think about it, it's actually unbelievably and horrifically simple. What follows, and behavior and opportunism, is a different subject, actually. But if we don't feel the outrage, horror, rage, that we need to feel when one guy is looking, is begging for his life with the words, I can't breathe. If we don't feel that down to our core, then we've lost our humanity. And that's actually the simplicity of it. So that's been sort of our approach here in studios. And Ati and I have kind of been, we've almost been therapizing each other as
we
really go
have.
Through this.
And yeah. I mean, you know, some friends of mine have also been asking, why is it that South Africans are reacting, are only reacting when a black guy is killed in America. Why don't we react like this when these racist incidents happen in South Africa?
Luba, your thoughts?
For me, South Africans have always been slow to react to anything around the world, no matter what it is. I mean, we even on our own continent. But to me, I think there's three issues that I picked up on that. The one was, and I'll deal with the ones that are less personal. And I think the one for me was the fact that Black Lives Matter, I think, this might not sound good to some people, doesn't really seem to have direction in the sense that, you know, if you look at the U.S. Civil Rights Movement, you knew you had a Martin Luther King who was leading it. So if you came to our situation, whether it was Oliver Tambo or Mandela, you had a rallying figure who could give direction. And to me, what I see in the U.S. is that it's almost a hashtag movement that doesn't seem to have very clear leaders. And therefore, it's easy to get derailed, because if there is a march or a protest, you know, who's in charge? Who's bringing the marshals and so forth? So I sometimes wish that they would have some kind of leader at the top and paid perhaps at state level. Then it would be easier for them to say, as Black Lives Matter, what do we actually want? Who are we lobbying? Because if you think about it, it goes back to the Obama days, and many people are venting their anger against Trump. And my belief is that this is not a president's problem. This is a heart issue in the hearts of Americans who are behaving in that way. Now, no legislation, as we've seen here, can change the hearts of people. And laying the blame on Trump's doorstep is just blinding yourself, because you had a black president, Obama, and this is when Black Lives Matter. So this problem existed before Trump and will exist after Trump. I think that's the first issue for me. The second is that, yes, it has been derailed by a lot of people who are just opportunistic. You know, where I struggled was when this event initially happened, I saw the video clip. Howard, I must say, was very hard to take. I mean, I literally just watched it as I lay in bed.
I can't watch it. I can't watch it.
I closed the video clip and I left it there for almost a full day. I mean, I haven't posted about it, because to me, I struggle in the sense that I can't tell you what the solution is. It's been going around for years. We have, you know, similar issues here. And I was sitting with my kids, 2 days ago, and it was pretty grim. I mean, the two older ones, and our assessment was that, and this is the pain that I think makes you, kind of lose focus on what you can do. You know, around the table, the lament was, what actually have black people done that you so despise? It's not a U.S. problem. I mean, I've traveled to the U.K. and I know my friends in the U.K. will say, ah, a wonderful country. And I'll say, you know what? I've felt incredible racism in France, in the U.K., around the world. And then you sit back and you say to yourself, as much as this is really shocking, but it is the experience of black people. And then, you know, you kind of ask yourself when you say, but what triggers this? What is it that when a person sees a black person? I've mentioned to you before that, I mean, if I really wind back to the 80s when I was at school, that's the experience that you got from police, and you knew that, you know, you'd be profiled. Where I sat in a train station, in Cape Town train station, with a mate of mine who was white, and we were literally almost arrested. I was frisked. I was, you know, they checked through my hair, my mouth, my pockets, everything. They were there for a drug bust. And, because I was black, I was picked on. And I mean, I was what, in grade 11? No apology, nothing. But I mean, we were roughed up for a good half an hour until they said, oh, sorry, wrong people. We caught the wrong.
Howard, your thoughts?
I think one of the sad things is, you know, if you go back maybe 20 years, America was the ideal icon for the world. Mm. It was a bastion of human rights, civil rights. It stood for something. And I think if you look at today, you realize that maybe we had a vision of America then which wasn't really real, because seething beneath the surface has always been this degree of racism. But if you look at America today and the society it's created, the turmoil, the chaos, the politics, the people on the streets, the rioting, the looting, the killing of and victimization of black people, it just seems like it's so far away from that vision that we used to have of this perfect society. It's sad. It's almost seems like the end of Western civilization, these ideals that we all seem to ascribe.
Yeah, and there's so much lost along the way that Unsigned says Trump has made America hate again. There's been an increase in anti-Semitic attacks, and the cities are burning. Charles says, what did the Jews do? Well, I guess, Charles, it's the same question for any form of racism, and no matter what form it's at, it's just, I think, really just about the other. It's about, that's what it is.
We just
couldn't cope with what you were saying, Luba. No, seriously, you just suddenly disappeared.
It's because Luba's black, huh?
Exactly, that's what it is.
Here I was pouring my heart in a boom, and I look at the phone and I'm talking to myself.
Right.
The pain is, what have we done and what is the solution? And I don't know what the solution is, because it's not legislation. It's about people's hearts. It's how you're raising your kid, what you're teaching them, and how do you make sure people don't teach their kids this? And that's the problem.
Well, I think it's different. It's actually interesting, Luba. I'm going to add another point. I was chatting to Kathy Kaler about this yesterday, and we were saying, or the day before, and she was saying that it's not even about what you teach. It's about what you tolerate. So if you're sitting at a table and somebody uses a derogatory word about another race, another religion, another group, and you don't stop it and you allow it, that's what your kids have now learned. So it's actually not even about the fact that it might not happen in your own home. But if you tolerate it, even in other people's homes, sitting around a table, then that's what your kids are learning. And I thought that was an interesting point. So I think we've got to be, it's got to be overt, our teaching around
a lot of people ignore those things because it doesn't affect them. But what they don't understand is that if someone is discriminating against one group, they're probably discriminating against another.
Well, I'm going to add even this whole Karen thing.
Mm.
This Karen thing is racist, and I know it's funny, and
yeah,
it feels okay because maybe it's empowering people against somebody who was traditionally privileged and hold power and might, but grouping,
yeah,
everybody as one person, as one thing which we now label and can mock, that's racism, and it's got to, we've got to be sensitive to it on every single level, even if it's funny, and it is funny. And you know, I get it.
Howard, you see, here's my challenge. Mm. And I think it comes with faith that somehow makes this difficult. You know, on social media, a mate of mine shared about growing up in Cape Town, where he was beaten up by policemen, literally walking from school back to home. He was a black kid, my age, and here in Cape at the same time. His father was a diplomat from Transco. Now, he posted this on Facebook, and I added a bit of my story, and I said, this breaks my heart. Do you know that most Christian people who came on and commented almost found fault in me and said, you need to get over this. You're still carrying this wound after so many years. There lies a problem. And I kept saying, wow, I'm amazed. So I'm the issue. And I promise you, I had one lady who went and
eventually blames you for it.
Because the view was, you know, God will deal with them, but you need to deal with your heart, what's in your heart. And I kept saying, you don't know my story. And how dare you lecture me? And this happens to be the problem, where instead of solving the problem, the focus is on you, that you need to get over your hurt and the anger. And so very often that's what you find. So you find we make no progress. So the person with the bigoted views can keep their views because we're saying God will deal with them. But you're the problem right now because you are hurt.
Incredible. The victim blaming. So you are the problem.
I mean, this person was adamant. They kept posting, but I've seen this very often where people say, Howard, rise above the situation. You know, forgive them, move on. And I keep saying, but okay, I'll move on. But that person's views remain. You know, what of it? So somehow there's almost some divine intervention that's expected that will change the person's views. So we don't deal with the issue. And it's the same. I think what Sinachi was saying is that most people are comfortable with such terminology being used around, as long as it's your own people around. And then when somebody else is different, then they might object to it. I mean, I grew up where people would say to me, you know what, Luba, you're not like the rest of them. And I would have to say to people, that's not a compliment, because, you know, you speak differently to the rest of them. You act, you think differently to the rest of them. So often I would be told that, and my kids would be saying, you know, I'm tired of being the kind of token black that gets praised, because the same people who are praising you are literally denouncing an entire, you know, nation of people, because you're different. You're not like us. And people get comfortable, and they'll actually use that terminology in your presence. And when you take offense, then they'll be surprised, as in, but why are you upset? We're not talking about you. And you have to say to people, yes, but you're talking about everybody else's like me. So it's very difficult. So I think many people are still comfortable to be bigoted in the presence of each other. They'll only mind their language if there's somebody else who they perceive will be offended by it. And there lies a challenge. You can't police what's taking place at home. If people are raised in that environment, you can't police what's taking place in the workplace where people have grown comfortable to such language.
Mm. I just want to read your message. David says, Howard, surely all lives matter. What about the silence of everyone when Israeli people are murdered? What about the murder of farmers in South Africa? And I just want to read you the last paragraph of what I wrote in that article, just because I think it kind of captures what I was trying to say. I said, it might be true that Jews are targeted in anti-Semitic attacks and that the reaction is often subdued. It might be true that many turn a blind eye when acts of terror are carried out against Jews in Israel. And it might be true that very few seem to care that the same terrorists and their families receive financial reward for their actions. And the more they have hurt, the greater the reward. But it is not relevant, because when a man begs for his wife while another stands above him and crushes him because he is black, there is no amount of rationalization that could allow us to be able to think away the pain that we should be feeling. And when the rage spills over, we don't need to agree or like everything about it, so long as we don't forget what ignited it in the first place. I can't breathe. And my point is that, of course, there's so many situations where we have ignored racism and we have ignored all sorts of things and we haven't reacted. But it isn't an excuse not to feel the pain here.
Oh. Yeah, I think we need to come to terms with the fact it's not always about us. We need to allow other people who are victims to be victims as well.
Yeah, M says, yeah, we might ask black, are we expecting black people to forget about apartheid, but we are not willing to forget about Hitler. We can't. It's part of who we are.
All I'll say, Howard, is that what I've felt when you share your pain is that people feel the need to compete or to belittle. And I think that's the most painful thing. And I always say to people, my experience might be different to yours or might not be as grave as yours, but just listen to it. And please don't tell me that other people have felt something similar. I'm not saying this about Jewish people. I'm just saying that in general.
No, I think it would be a fair criticism if we do that.
Primarily in the white community. So I'll find somebody who will say to me, but Luba, we went through similar things. And I'm saying, I understand that. But right now, I'm the one who's talking and I opened I created this platform to talk about my pain. And I think respect the fact that it's about me. I do want to listen to your story, but we weren't talking about your story. And I think that's where you almost get hurt the second time and you're saying, now I'm being belittled or being compared. And I think what happened to the Jewish people is instructive. It's different in some ways. And this, so everybody, whether you're talking of the Anglo-Boer War or whatever, there's space for all of these stories. But if something is on the platform right now, and I think it's just being courteous to deal with that particular issue, when the anger and the hurt has kind of died down, then you can move on and bring them all together. But at that particular time, I think we owe it to that particular victim or whoever's expressing their feelings to listen to them and not dilute their pain.
I think it's beautifully said. Sanati,
yeah,
your thoughts?
I absolutely, absolutely agree. We have this need to compare. And yeah, we really should focus on the issue at hand right now. And then, because we fix the world little by little. We can't do it all at once. So we do just need to have that empathy.
Howard, your last thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think no one has a monopoly on suffering. Allow victims to be victims and let's, yes, one moment and one action at a time. But I think the important point that I think everyone was making is let's actually change something because of this. It's no use just talking about it. Mm-hmm. So if the thing we're going to change is the fact that if someone is racist or uses a bad word in front of you, you can't let it slide. You actually have to stop that conversation and say, I won't be party to any further of this racism. Please exclude me.
100%.
So if we just talk about it and don't take action, then we're doing nothing to solve the problem.
Absolutely, 1,000% correct. Gentlemen, this is where we love and leave you. Please continue to send your thoughts, 34519 or 0618951019. It's a very intense conversation, but I think a very important one that we able to try and plot our way through. And as you've seen, that's exactly what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
It's just not simple
really,
in terms of
yes.
everything that goes around
how we get
it.
There, yeah.
Absolutely right. It is 9 o'clock. Hope you enjoyed. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. for Throwback Thursday.